अभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वापदान्तिकां वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साकृजातं सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवां साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणाललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पदे गोपेश गोपिका कान्ता राधा कान्ता नमस्तु ते सप्त काञ्चन गौरङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धोभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Morning, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 50. Krishna establishes the city of Dwarka. Now we have texts 30 through 40 to cover.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Jagraha
Viratham
Rama.
Jagraha Viratham Rama.
Jagraha Viratham Rama.
Jarasandham
Mahabalam.
Jarasandham Mahabalam.
Jarasandham Mahabalam.
Hatanaki Vashishtasum.
Hatanaki
Vashishtasum. Simha Simham Ivaujasa.
Simha
Simham Ivaujasa. Jagraha Virutham Rama.
Jarasandham
Mahabalam. Hataniki Vashishtasum. Simha Simham Ivaujasa. Jagraha Virutham Rama.
Jarasandham
Mahabalam. Hataniki Vashishtasum. Simha Simham Ivaujasa.
Jarasandham Mahabalam.
Satanaki Vishishasam Simham Simha Vivaujasa Jagraha Viratham Rama Jarasandham Mahabalam Hatanika Vashishtasam Simha Simham Vivaujasa Chakraha Viratam Rama Charasandham Mahabalam Hatanaki Vashishtasum Simha Simham Ivaujasa Chakraha Viratam Rama Charasandham Mahabalam Hatanika Vashishtasum Simha Simham Ivaujasa Jagraha. He seized Viratham, who was deprived of his chariot. Ramaha, Lord Balarama. Jarasandham, Jarasandha. Maha, very. Balam, strong. Hata, killed. Anika, whose army? Avashishta, remaining. Asam, whose breath? Simha, a lion. Simham, another lion. Iva, as. Ojasa, forcibly. Translation. Jarasandha, with his chariot lost and all his soldiers dead, was left with only his breath. At that point, Lord Balaram forcibly seized the powerful warrior, just as one lion takes hold of another. We can read all the other verses together. 31. Madhyamanam hataratim pashair varunamanushai varayamasa govindas tenakarya chikirshaya. With the divine noose of Varuna and other mortal ropes, Balaram began tying up Jarasandha, who had killed so many foes. But Lord Govinda still had a purpose to fulfill through Jarasandha, and thus he asked Balaram to stop. Report. The word hataratim means who has killed his enemies, or through whom his enemies would be killed. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti has provided this thoughtful note. 32-33.
Samukto lokanatha bhyam vridito virasammataha tapase krita sankalpo varita papirajabhi vakhyai pavitrartha padair nayanai prakritairapi svakarma bandha prapto yam yadhubiste parabhava.
Jarasandha, whom Phidias had highly honored, was ashamed after being released by the two lords of the universe, and thus he decided to undergo penances. On the road, however, several kings convinced him, with both spiritual wisdom and mundane arguments, that he should give up his idea of self-abnegation. They told him, "Your defeat by the Yadus was simply the unavoidable reaction of your past karma." 34.
Hateshu sarvanikeshu nripo barhadrathastada upekshito bhagavata magadhandurmanayayau.
All of his armies having been killed and himself neglected by the personality of Godhead, King Jarasandha, son of Brihadratha, then sadly returned to the kingdom of the Magadhas. 35-36.
Mukundo pyakshato balo nishtir nari balar navaha vikiryamana kusumai vidashai namodita mathurai rupasangamya vijvarai muditasmabhi upagiya mana vijaya sutama gadavantibhi.
Lord Mukunda had crossed the ocean of his enemy's armies with his own military force completely intact. He received congratulations from the denizens of heaven, who showered him with flowers. The people of Mathura, relieved of their feverish anxiety and filled with joy, came out to meet him as professional bards, heralds, and panegyrists sang in praise of his victory. So who knows what a panegyrist is?
Panegyrist?
Yeah, it's like a praiser, someone who's there to praise. Professional praise singer. 37-38.
Shankadundubhayo netur bheritur yanyane kashaha vina venu mridangani puram pravashati prabhu shikta markam hrishta janam Krishtajanam pataka bhirabhyalangritam nirghushtam brahma goshena kautuka bhadhataranam.
As the Lord entered his city, conch shells and kettle drums sounded, and many drums, horns, veenas, flutes, and mridangas played in concert. The boulevards were sprinkled with water, there were banners everywhere, and the gateways were decorated for the celebration. The citizens were elated, and the city resounded with their chanting of Vedic hymns. 39.
Nichiyamano naribhir malyatat yakshatankurai nirikshyamana sasneham prityutkalita lochanai.
As the women of the city affectionately looked at the Lord, their eyes wide open with love, they scattered flower garlands, yogurt, parched rice, and newly grown sprouts upon him. Report. All this is taking place as Lord Krishna enters the city of Mathura. Text 40.
Ayodhana katam vittam anandam virabhushanam yadu raja yatat sarvam ahitam pradishat prabhu.
Lord Krishna then presented to the Yadu king all the wealth that had fallen on the battlefield, namely the countless ornaments of the dead warriors. Report. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti adds that jeweled ornaments had also been collected from the horses and other animals. What might be added here, for the sake of the squeamish, is that Jarasandha came to Mathura with the clear intention of slaughtering every last man in the city, including Krishna and Balaram. It is out of the causeless mercy of the Lord that he gives the conditioned souls a taste of their own medicine, and thus helps them become more sensitive to the laws of nature and the existence of a supreme Godhead. Ultimately, Krishna awarded Jarasandha and others killed on the battlefield spiritual liberation. The Lord is strict, but he is not malicious. In fact, he is an ocean of mercy.
So the ghastly battle has been concluded, and Jarasandha has been totally devastated and humiliated. For a Kshatriya, to be defeated in battle is, while it's not obviously desirable, it can be tolerated if one has been defeated by a superior opponent and has fought with all his strength. And actually the Kshatriya's desire is to die on the battlefield. If they're not able to gain victory, then they're quite happy to give up their life in the process. Because the understanding is that a Kshatriya, if he dies doing his dharma fighting on the battlefield, he'll attain the heavenly planets. But Jarasandha wasn't even granted that mercy. He was defeated, captured, humiliated, and released. Because, as we heard previously, Krishna wanted to continue this activity of killing the soldiers of Jarasandha, because he knew Jarasandha would return and bring another army and another army 17 times. So because Krishna's purpose, one of his primary purposes is to lessen the burden of the earth, and there were so many huge armed forces at that time, so it was a good opportunity for him to destroy them all and lessen the burden of the earth. But for Jarasandha personally, this was a great humiliation. And therefore he decided, as we read in text 32-33, that he wasn't even going to return to his kingdom. He was so humiliated that he'd come there with such a big grand plan. He abused Krishna and Balaram verbally, and he was very confident that he would destroy them. And his forces were overwhelmingly superior to Krishna's and Balaram's. It's described that Krishna and Balaram just had a small party of soldiers, whereas 23 Aksharhinis is an incredible amount of military force, even bigger than the combined forces of the Pandavas and Kauravas at Kurukshetra. So he had all reason to believe that he would be victorious, but in a very short span of time, there's no exact time given here, but it seems, you know, within a few hours perhaps, or even less, all within one day, his entire army was annihilated. Just like in the Battle of Kurukshetra, it took 18 days to destroy 18 Aksharhinis, but here 23 Aksharhinis were finished in less than a day. So it's unprecedented slaughter, only possible by the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. So Jarasandha decided to give up his kingdom and retire to practice austerities. But he was convinced otherwise by some friends of his who said, "It's just your karma, don't worry, try again." So that's what he did, as we'll read in future verses. In Purport to text 40, it's pointed out that all the soldiers who were killed on the battlefield attained spiritual liberation, and therefore the Lord is an ocean of mercy. So it's interesting to note that this benediction wasn't previously given to the asuras who were killed by the Lord. In other incarnations, the other demons who were killed by other incarnations were not automatically liberated. And this is discussed by Narad Muni in chapter 5 of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when he's talking to the Pandavas. And he's glorifying the Pandavas as being so dear to Krishna. And he's glorifying Krishna also, that Krishna is the one who gives liberation to the demons that he kills. Previously, when Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, or Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Kalanemi, different demons are listed, when they were killed by various incarnations, they were not given automatic liberation. Rather, they had to take birth again. And some of them, as we know, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, they were Jaya and Vijaya, they took repeated births as enemies of the Lord. So the other incarnations were not as merciful as Krishna. Krishna, he gave liberation to all these demons whom he killed. And not just the demons, even the soldiers who were present, killed in the presence of the Lord, both here and at Kurukshetra, were given, Narad Muni says, either Sayujya Mukti or Sarupya Mukti, I believe. So they were given such a high status just by having been killed in the presence of the Lord or by the Lord himself. So this was not given by other incarnations. In fact, Narad Muni points out that even the other incarnations, they didn't even bestow pure devotional service. And the exception to that, he says, is Nrisingadev. He bestowed pure devotional service to Prahlad. But prior to Nrisingadev, the other incarnations did not bestow pure devotional service, even when they appeared and enacted their pastimes. Lord Ram, however, he did bestow pure devotional service to his close network of devotees like Hanuman, Sugriva, Vibhishan, and a few names are mentioned. Whereas Krishna, he is so much more merciful that he would give pure devotional, you know, he would at least give the opportunity for pure devotional service to whomever he met, and he would give liberation to all the demons that he killed. You know, so therefore Krishna is glorified as the most merciful. And particularly in the third canto of the famous verse, which describes Krishna's merciful nature when he was killing Putana.
Ahovakiyam sanakalakutam chikam sayapaya yadapyasadhi Sebhe katim dhatrichitam tatonyam kamva dayalum sharanam rajema.
The last line is very powerful. I believe it's Uddhava is praying that. Is it Uddhava or Vidura? Yeah, maybe. I think it's Vidura. He's praying that, whom shall I take shelter of who is more merciful than Krishna? Kamva dayalum sharanam rajema. He who gave the position of a nurse even to the horrible sister of Baka, Ho Baki Yamsa, who had smeared poison on her breast and came to kill Krishna, came to poison Krishna with such evil intent, even to such a person, Krishna is so merciful that he gave the position of a nurse in her next, you know, next birth. So who is there more merciful than Krishna, whom I should take shelter of? So therefore, Krishna is glorified as the ultimate personality of Godhead. Of course, we know even more merciful than Lord Krishna is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he came, he didn't even kill the demons. He actually distributed love of Godhead even to people who were unwilling, forcibly or in a very outgoing, charitable mood. He would go out and give the opportunity for pure devotional service, give prema bhakti through the holy name to everybody. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is even more merciful than Krishna. So, for a kshatriya, going back to this point of Jarasandha having been defeated and feeling very ashamed of himself, this point is also repeated in Bhagavad Gita when Krishna is preaching to Arjuna that he shouldn't give up fighting. His duty as a kshatriya is to fight, and Krishna also wants him to fight. And Krishna is giving so many different reasons why he should fight and not retire from the battle. So one of these arguments that he gives is the same one, that you are known as a great hero and that you've defeated so many enemies. And if you give up fighting now, people are going to criticize and joke at you and scorn you. Akirtim chapi bhutani kathayishyanti devayam sambhavitasya cha kirtir maranadati richyate. That you're famous, kirti. You're glorified. But if you don't fight, people are just going to scorn you, that you're a coward and you're leaving the battlefield. And because you have been respected so much previously, especially as a kshatriya, his name and reputation is the most important thing for a kshatriya. So if you lose your reputation, it'll be even worse than dying. The same thing here, Jarasandha is feeling that this is worse than death. It'd be better if I had been killed on the battlefield, at least then, you know, I would have attained the heavens. I would be glorified as having tried my best and fought to the end. But having been released by Krishna and Balaram, he's actually suffering a fate worse than death. So Krishna was reminding Arjuna that you shouldn't also have to suffer such a fate. You should fight, even if you don't at the moment think you want to. You should listen to me and you should fight and avoid this ignoble fate. For a kshatriya, kirti yasya sajivati, there's a Vedic line that says, one who has fame, he lives forever. So name and fame, reputation, keeping one's word, these are paramount principles in the life of a kshatriya. There's a similar parallel kind of story in Mahabharata, where Duryodhan, he also, having suffered a reversal, he had also decided to give up his kingdom, give up his life, and just pass to death. So this occurred when the Pandavas were during their years of exile. So even when they were in exile, Duryodhan wasn't satisfied. He was still trying to give trouble to them, even when they were living in the forest, having been banished by him. So on one occasion, he heard that the Pandavas were living at Dvaitavan, which was not too far from Hastinapur. And he decided that we should, along with Karna and Shakuni, they made a plan. So let's go nearby to where the Pandavas are staying and take all our royal opulence and big party and have a picnic and build some holiday homes and show off our opulence to the Pandavas, who are living in great misery, in great austerity, without anything. We'll go and and make them feel bad by displaying our opulence to them. So they made this plan, and Duryodhana, he felt that probably Dhritarashtra won't want us to go because, you know, he knows the Pandavas are there, and he'll probably try to stop us, so we have to think of some excuse. So they came up with a plan that the herd of cows of the Kauravas were also grazing in that forest, and it was one of their duties is to count and check the herd. So they told Dhritarashtra, we want to go to Dvaitavan to look after the cows and check on them and do a census of the cows. But Dhritarashtra was a bit hesitant because he thought maybe they had some intention to bother the Pandavas, but eventually he, as usual, he agreed and he let them go. So Duryodhana gathered a huge party with a small army and all the queens and, you know, so many servants, and they went there and constructed different houses, and they did their job with the cattle, you know, just to do their duty in name at least. And then they started hunting and frolicking in the forest. And eventually they came to the lake, and across the lake was where the Pandavas were staying. So Duryodhana told his men, okay, build some cottages right here so we can be right next to the Pandavas and they'll, you know, have to see us every day. So when Duryodhana's men were clearing out the area, they were going to start their building, they were stopped by some Gandharvas. And the Gandharvas told them that we're here at the moment, we're bathing in the lake, don't disturb us. And Duryodhana's men went back to him and said, oh, there's a problem that there are some Gandharvas here and they don't want us to intrude. Duryodhana said, I'm the king of the earth, who are they? Tell them to go away, otherwise we'll force them out. And the message was conveyed. Then Gandharvas responded that we're beings of the heavens, we don't have to listen to you mortals. Don't challenge us, it'll, you know, be to your detriment. So, as expected, a fight broke out, and the Kauravas attacked the Gandharvas. And at first, the battle went through different phases, and at one point Karna was creating a great slaughter among the Gandharva troops. And then the king of the Gandharvas, he entered the battle, his name was Chitvasena, and he, with his mystic illusions, he was able to destroy Karna's chariot and overpower him. And then Karna fled away from the battlefield. And ultimately, Duryodhana and all his brothers were captured by the Gandharvas, and they were chained up. And not only that, even their queens were similarly arrested. So this was a great disaster for Duryodhana. So some of the survivors of the battle, they made their way to the Pandavas' camp, which was nearby, and told them what had happened. Said, please, you should save the honor of our dynasty. The king Duryodhana has been arrested by the Gandharvas. So they came praying for protection from Yudhishthira. So before even anyone could say anything, Bhima, he immediately burst out in great ecstasy. And he said that, oh, what we were going to accomplish with so much endeavor, we would have to gather a big army and chariots and horses and fight. The Gandharvas have done for us. This is wonderful news. And so he was very pleased that Duryodhana had already been defeated. But Yudhishthira, as always, the epitome of dharma, he said, no, Bhima, you shouldn't think like that. These are our kinsmen. Not only that, they're even arrested the women. This is a great insult to our dynasty. We are 105 brothers if there's a threat to the throne. And among ourselves, we may have differences, but if there's an outside threat, then we should stand united and help our cousins. So he sent, Yudhishthira sent the four brothers, Arjuna, Bhima, and Nakula, Sahadev, to rescue Duryodhana. And he himself was undergoing some vow, and he was doing a yajna at that time, so he wasn't able to interrupt his worship. But he sent his brothers. So they immediately went to the Gandharvas and requested them, you should please release Duryodhana. But they were not interested. They were actually planning to, they had them chained up, and they were going to take them to Indra, and like as prisoners. And so again, there were some words exchanged, and they started to fight. So Arjuna and the four, his three brothers, they were able to defeat the Gandharvas. And Chitrasena again came. He was the king, he was the one who had defeated Karna. He came forward to fight, but he was also not able to overpower Arjuna. So, and actually Chittasena was a friend of Arjuna, and he stopped fighting and said, actually Arjuna, Indra had sent us here to foil Duryodhana's plan. Duryodhana came only to harass all of you. So we were sent to stop that. But if you insist, then we'll release Duryodhana, even though he's so malicious and has so much enmity towards you. And Arjuna said, yes, please release them. That's the order of our brother Yudhishthira. And actually, no, they took everyone. They took Duryodhana. They couldn't really agree. Chitrasena was saying, you shouldn't release him. You know, he's so malicious. And Arjuna said, okay, let's go talk to Yudhishthira about it. So everyone was taken in procession. And they're still bound up, Duryodhana and all his brothers. And they were presented before Yudhishthira. And Yudhishthira said, no, no, please, let them go. And he was comforting Duryodhana. You know, you shouldn't do these rash things. It gets you in trouble all the time. Go back with your brothers. Be happy. And then the Gandharvas dispersed and the Kauravas were released. So after this incident, Duryodhana felt so mortified. He was almost in a daze. And they camped for the night. They were going to return to Hastinapur. And he told Karna and the others that I can't do it anymore. You know, I went there to insult the Pandavas, and I was so humiliated. I was rescued by them and released by them. I can't maintain my life anymore. This is just too much. I'm going to give up my body right here. And he actually spread kusha grass, and he took some vow of fasting to death. And Karna, Dushasan, and Shakuni, they came, tried to beg him to stop, and he refused. And Karna, who had fled the battlefield, he returned. And he didn't know what had happened. He thought that Duryodhana must have defeated the Gandharvas. So he started praising Duryodhana, and that made him feel even worse. And he said, Karna, you don't know the whole story. And he told him, we were defeated, and the Pandavas released us. So I'm going to give up my life. And he told Dushasan, you take over the kingdom. I make you the king in my stead. And he started meditating, and no one knew what to do. He was ready to give up his life. So while this was going on, the Daityas and the Danavas, the demons who lived in the lower planets, they were alarmed because they had plans to conquer the world through Duryodhana. So they said, we have to dissuade him from giving up his life, otherwise our plans are going to be foiled. So then they started performing some sacrifice, and they created a goddess who was able to bring Duryodhana's subtle body down to their planets. And they had a whole conversation with Duryodhana. They presented themselves as, you know, you're a great demon, your incarnation of Naraka, and, no, that was Karna, I think, and Kalanemi, that. And they said, you know, we have incarnated on earth, we have taken birth to support you, and so many different kings are empowered by us. And not only that, when the battle comes, we're going to possess the minds of Drona and Bhishma and Kripa, all of them, so they will slaughter your enemies without mercy. And we're all there to support you, so don't be disheartened, don't give up your life. You know, you're very powerful, you're going to do it with our help. So Duryodhana, this was all going on a subtle plane while his gross body was still in meditation. But he realized that, you know, something actually happened, and he broke his meditation and decided that, you know, I actually don't have anything to worry about. All these great powerful demons are there to support me. So he gave up his vow of fasting to death and returned to Hastinapur and continued on with his plans. So in similar instance here, where Jarasandha was defeated very severely and had planned to give up his kingdom, Duryodhana similarly had the same intention, but ultimately he was dissuaded, just like Jarasandha. Can you put up the verse? It's Madhya 15:269. So the verse that Bhima spoke actually appears in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Does anyone know where? Or in what context? We'll put it up there. Mahatahi prayatnena hasyashvaratapattibhi asmabhiryad anushteyam gandharvaistar anushtitam. What we have had to arrange with great endeavor by collecting elephants, horses, chariots and infantry soldiers has already been accomplished by the Gandharvas. Anyone know? Not quite. So this was appears in the story of, this is spoken by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya in condemnation of his son-in-law, Amogha. So we can just briefly cover that pastime. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was living in Jagannath Puri, and he would be invited by different devotees to take lunch. So when the devotees from Bengal were present during the Rath Yatra period, then there were so many invitations. But once they had left, then the Lord was more open. His schedule was more open. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya approached him, and he said, "My Lord, please come to my house every day for 1 month for lunch." And Mahaprabhu said, "I'm sorry, I'm a sannyasi. I'm supposed to just eat a little bit here and there. I can't do that." He said, "Okay, 20 days. He said, "No, nothing doing, I can't do it." He said, "Okay, 15. And Mahaprabhu said, "No, I'll just come once only." And we know how in India you always have to bargain. So this is a Shastric historical reference of how Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Mahaprabhu had to bargain and haggle. So it went from 30 to 20 to 15. Mahaprabhu said, "No, just one." And then finally they came to an agreement, "Okay, 5 days." And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, "Okay, I'll invite the other sannyasis and devotees for the rest of the month. But you come for 5 days and you have to come today itself." Mahaprabhu said, "Okay, I'll come today." So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya immediately went back, and along with his wife, they started cooking a grand feast. And Mahaprabhu would perform his noon duties, which I believe is to take bath in the ocean, chant Gayatri Mantra, and then he came to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house for lunch. So there's a very long description of all the amazing varieties of food that had been cooked by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and his wife. And when Mahaprabhu came, he said he was simply astonished to see the arrangements. They'd actually constructed a separate room just for Mahaprabhu to have his luncheon. There was another room where the offering was made. And when he saw the huge amount of rice and the dozens of vegetables and sweets that were prepared, Mahaprabhu said, "How is it possible that just 6 hours the two of you cooked all these offerings?" And he said, "I don't think 100 men with 100 fires could even cook this much." And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, no, it's all your mercy. Whoever, the person who is going to eat this food is the one who empowered us to cook it." And so they were speaking like this very jokingly to each other. So Mahaprabhu, as was often the case, he said, "Just give me another plate and I'll take a little bit." And Sarvabhauma said, no, you have to sit right here where the offering was made and enjoy everything." And he said, "Don't try to trick me. I know how much you can eat. In the Jagannath temple, you are present there as Jagannath, and you eat 52 offerings every day. And there are hundreds of buckets of bhoga every offering. And in Dwarka, there are 16,000 palaces, and you eat in each of them every day. And in Vrindavan, you eat in all your uncle's houses. So don't try to, every day, so don't try to trick me. Please just sit here and take prasadam." So Mahaprabhu was defeated by this logic, so he sat down to enjoy the prasadam. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, his daughter, whose name was Shati, she was married to one Brahmana named Amogha, who was a great fault finder. So Sarvabhauma knew this, so he was guarding the door to not let Amogha see what's going on. But when he started serving, then he couldn't wash the door at the same time. So Amogha poked his head in, and he saw Mahaprabhu sitting there on this big seat with this huge 6 pounds of cooked rice in front of him. And he immediately said, "What is this? This sannyasi is supposed to be renounced. The sannyasi is eating enough for 10 or 12 people." And he made this comment, and Sarvabhauma just looked at him with glaring eyes, and Amogha immediately left. And Sarvabhauma grabbed a stick and started chasing him to beat him. But of course Sarvabhauma was elderly, so he wasn't able to catch him. But he was just cursing and condemning his son-in-law. And he felt so terrible that Mahaprabhu had been insulted like this, and he was apologizing repeatedly to the Lord. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't take it at all seriously. He said, "Actually, what he's saying is true. This is food for 10 or 12 people, so don't take it seriously. It's nothing wrong what he's saying." But even after the meal was over, Mahaprabhu was fully satisfied, and he was going back to his residence. So Sarvabhauma was still apologizing and following him and touching his feet, saying, "Please forgive us. I brought you to my house just to have you insulted, And Mahaprabhu said, "Don't worry, don't take it seriously, it's fine." But once he came home also, and Sarvabhauma and his wife, both of them were just lamenting. They said, "Let my daughter become a widow this offender, Amoga, he should die. Or maybe I should give up my own life, or he should be killed. So that they were thinking of different ways how this offense could be atoned for. And then Sarvamoha said, actually, I can't give up my own life, and he can't be killed either because he's a Brahmana, I'm also a Brahmana. So better we just sever all relations with him. When a husband is fallen, then the wife is allowed to sever relations. So let my daughter have nothing more to do with Amoga, and I won't even speak his name anymore. So they were so, so affected by this blasphemy. Whereas Mahaprabhu, he didn't take it seriously at all. So Amoga, he'd run away, and the next morning he contracted cholera, and he was about to die, basically. So when Sarvabhauma was very happy to hear this, and this is a just reaction, and that's when he quoted this verse. That, instead of me having to do anything to chastise Amoga, it's naturally happening. So he was quite satisfied. I don't think cholera generally acts so quickly. This seems to be like a accelerated version of being afflicted by cholera. So when Gopinathacharya, who was brother-in-law of Sarvabhauma, he visited Lord Chaitanya that morning, so Mahaprabhu was interested to know what's happening at Sarvabhauma's house, because he knew that they were quite upset the day before. He said, well, Sarvabhauma and his wife, they're both fasting still, because they feel so bad, and their son-in-law, Amoga, he's dying of cholera. So when Mahaprabhu got this news, he was very alarmed and immediately rushed to that place. You can just imagine Mahaprabhu, running across the Jagannath Puri and through the streets to wherever Amoga was, who was lying there almost dead. So he immediately came to him and he touched him on the heart. And he said, Amoga, a Brahmana's heart is supposed to be very pure and clean, and therefore Lord Vishnu can reside there. So why have you allowed the chandala of jealousy to reside there? Now you should get up and chant Hare Krishna and purify yourself from these offenses and this, bad qualities in your heart. So as soon as Lord Chaitanya touched him and uttered these words, Amoga immediately jumped up and started chanting in ecstasy and displaying all the ecstatic symptoms. And he also simultaneously begged forgiveness from the Lord, and he started beating himself. He started slapping his face. He said, by this mouth I have offended the Lord. And repeatedly his cheeks started to swell up. So Gopinathacharya had to actually physically restrain him, hold his hands, and said, don't worry, your offense is forgiven. And in this way, the situation was resolved. And then Mahaprabhu went to Sarvabhauma's house. And Sarvabhauma said, why did you do that? It would be better if he had died. And Lord Chaitanya said, no, everyone in your house is dear to me. Even your servants and your, workers and your, what to speak of, your relatives. And even, he says, even your dog is dear to me. Or even the dog residing in your house is dear to me. So it's not clear if Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya actually had a pet dog, but if he had one, even the dog would have been dear to the Lord. So then Mahaprabhu said, okay, now you should give up your fasting, go have darshan of Lord Jagannath and come back and take prasad. And Sarvabhauma said, okay, I'll do that, but you please go ahead and have darshan. So Mahaprabhu said, okay, Gopinathacharya, I want you to stay here and report to me that Sarvabhauma is actually going to give up his fasting. And in that way, the pastime was concluded. So we can see that Lord Chaitanya, again, it relates to the point in the beginning, how merciful Lord Krishna is compared to the other incarnations, and how merciful Lord Chaitanya is. Even to an offender, he's given pure love of Godhead. And if it had been some other person who was offended by Amoga, another Vaishnava, then naturally the Lord would respond in a different way. We know that he didn't tolerate any offense to his devotees like in the Jagai Madai pastime. But because it was directly himself and he didn't think it was a serious offense, then he very easily forgave Amoga, especially because he was part of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's family. So in this way, there are many nice lessons we can derive from these pastimes and try to absorb ourselves more and more in the mood of the Lord and the mood of the Lord's devotees, in how to deal with such tricky situations, offenses, and criticism. We can get example from the Lord himself. And that way we can and all their lives to be centered around Krishna. So, unless you have any further comments or questions, we can conclude here. Yes.
On this day, I'm part of the part-time at Duryodhana, but he was also doing the same thing like what Jarasandha was doing, and then he was told to give up his fasting and everything like that, right? Something like
yeah.
that. And then there was another guy called Jayadrat,
mm-hmm.
if you remember. He had the same kind of incident too. And
yeah.
I guess the reason for them not killing himself or something is because they had to enact this pastime in the Mahabharat, and you know the pastime is all of those guys.
Yeah.
So one question was asked, how was it possible that Arjuna could defeat Chitrasena? And it's stated, I don't know exactly who said it, but it's stated that because Arjuna was brahmachari then, you know, because he was a brahmachari then he was able to, because it might have been Chitrasena. Chitrasena said no grihastha could defeat him.
Perhaps, yeah, I'm not aware of that. But they were actually friends, so he wasn't going to seriously fight with Arjuna. He had actually been sent there to protect the Pandavas. Okay. Thank you, Hare Krishna. Antarashimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Kaurupremanda.